You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is our iZombie TV version. My name is Heather, and I am joined by my paranormal podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
I'm hoping you're paranormal and you're not, like, just sucking brains, and that's how you know all this stuff. You know, some sort of psychic link. That's what you've got, right?
Well, right? Let's just say you can't prove anything.
Yeah, I don't want to prove anything. I like the mystery of it all. I like the mystery of what's going on. Kind of like where this season of iZombie is going. We are here to talk about iZombie Season 1, Episode 6, Virtual Reality Bites. Again, I like their titles. They're doing good. I'm keeping them.
Yeah, you better.
I mean, I do like their title cards. We do talk about these each week. So we had Just Desserts, which, you know, when you're talking about eating brains, that's kind of sketchy. About a Boy, Back in the Game, Breakfast of Champions, Stairway to Heaven, which if you're in Wayne's World, no Stairway to Heaven, you can't play that. Then there's your favorite, which was
Hack to the Future.
Awesome title.
Just brilliant.
Somebody is really having fun with these, and I appreciate it because they're just as geeky as we are. And somebody in the room just went, it's about a hacker. It's like Hack to the Future. Ha, we're using that.
No, come on. Whoever is writing the title cards has just this approach to life where he or she just asks the question, what is the worst possible pun I can make? Ooh, let's do this.
I love it. I love puns. The badder they are, the better they are when it comes to puns.
Yeah.
They had one other title card. Major head wound, which is what they almost got. Because there was this major head wound moment at the very beginning of the episode. I promise you, I had to rewind it. We're talking the first 20 seconds of the episode. I was like, what? And rewind. Because we start with Major lying on that stainless steel slab in the morgue after we left him last week on the skate park. How dare they start the episode like this and make my heart just stop? Because I'm like, you can't kill Major. No.
I am right there with you. I swear to everything that's holy. When I saw that first frame, I was like, no. No, no, they didn't. I'm sure that's just a body of somebody who looks like him. You know, Hollywood
exactly.
Is full
as evil twin.
Oh, yeah, full evil twin, or some other guy who just looks like him. You know,
or an evil tween, because they're pretty evil.
Yeah,
too.
But this is not Major. Major is alive. Even if I have to write denial fic to prove it. I will, because Major is alive and well and having a tournament of video games with Ravi. But no, he's not dead.
And here's where I'm going to give kudos to the writers, and I'm going to give kudos to Robert Buckley, because Major is a character that could very easily just be somebody that we're like, yeah, let's get through his storyline. He doesn't have anything really to contribute. I mean, we're talking, this is the fiance back when she was pretty in pink, Liv, when everything was happy-go-lucky. What purpose does he serve? He serves a purpose where in 20 seconds you and I are both freaking out.
Yeah.
That he's dead. And he would have been dead, because he wasn't scratched. He would have been dead. And I'm like, that can't be. And then when you go to the next shot where you see Ravi just over his body, I'm like, Ravi cannot be doing an autopsy, just like devil. No big deal. It could be any guy off the street. This is your roommate. This is your gaming buddy. And then they, of course, you know, Major opens his eyes, and you see that he's just stitching him up, and I breathed a big sigh of relief. I'm like, oh my god, okay, I gotta start the episode again, because I gotta start again from a clear place. Major is okay.
Yeah, then...
And Ravi is not heartless, because Ravi rocks. Hashtag Ravi rocks. I don't want him to be heartless about his new bro.
No, come on. Their bromance is worth everything, and I like to believe that Ravi would be heartbroken. That his roommate and gaming buddy and all-around good friend, even, let's say, best friend, is dead on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But changing the topic only slightly, how adorable was it that Ravi joked about, it would be easier if you were dead. Having all that performed. Well, now that we knew Major was alive, that was funny.
Yes. Yes, it was. Well, and I think it shows that the relationship between Ravi and Major, that they're doing that kind of joking. Yeah. That they're able to just, you know, when Major looked bad, I mean, he was not treated nicely on that skate park. When Henchman Guy threw him all around, he really got beat up. And they didn't spare any expense on that makeup, really making him look beat up. The fact that these two are able to joke about this. And I even love it when Liv comes in and sees Ravi doing all those stitches. And it's like, no, you should be doing this, you know, so it doesn't scar and all this. And should I take over? Please, God, yes. Just Ravi does not want to work on a living being, you know. So it was just, especially his best buddy. That was a priceless scene. And I love seeing how the three of them actually work together as friends. Even though there's still that tension between Major and Liv, they really do seem to be working through it. That whole, what did he say? That he was a rocker blocker? He rocker blocked her with Arthur Pendragon. I just think it's so cute and how they interacted, and it was just comfortable, and I totally bought them. I'm a dangerous man, but Candyman is dangerous-er. I loved seeing the three of them together.
I love it. I love it especially because the way the writers portray that dynamic between Liv, Major, and Ravi, the three of them, is really realistic. I mean, you cut out the zombie factor, and it's actually, you know, pretty mature way to deal with a change in the relationship status. And I loved how they, all three of them, can handle it, and handle it well, that it doesn't completely fall apart. You know, you can see in every interaction between Major and Liv that they're still finding their footing in this new situation that neither of them really wanted, but hey, that's the reality.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and even when we have later on, when he gets all worked up and he pops that stitch and I'm just going to go over to Liv and have her fix it. And Ravi's trying to get him to stay. No. And when he's like, really, I'll just have her do it. It's no big deal. She's up late. Yeah, she's not alone. And the whole, that bro moment between the two of them when, you know, Major realizes that she wasn't alone, that things are progressing with her, even though they have this new relationship, and things are progressing with him and Ravi too, that they really are becoming friends, that Ravi is going to tell him that, dude, I don't want you to go over there and have it right in their face. I mean, it was really nice. I like I said, I believe that these guys are friends.
At the beginning of the show, I would not tell you that I would be so happy to have Major to be a three-dimensional character. At the very beginning, I was perfectly okay with him just being there pretty. Come on, some characters, especially hunks like Robert Buckley, just look pretty and I enjoyed them. I watched Spartacus. I enjoy hunky hunks who, you know, walk around shirtless. Anyway.
As it should be.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't mind if he was just there pretty, but his storyline is not only relevant to everything that that's happening on the show with Team Zombie and Liv and everything around, but it's actually interesting. That's like shock to me that they managed to make it interesting.
Yeah, I'm amazed too, because I was ready to write him off. I was ready for, okay, when are we going to get the shirtless shot? Yeah. Yay, thank you. We got that, what, two episodes ago? A little bit more than that. Thank you. We have our purpose. He's kind of a, he's a friend. He's worked his way into this. He can be the CW hunk kind of a guy. But his, this episode, I think, really moved his storyline along. I mean, we got to see him at that halfway house where he, you know, doing his, like, we saw that he's a social worker now. We've heard about it before.
But now we
actually get to see how he's interacting. Yeah. And I love that moment when he goes into the safe house and there's the group there and the woman is trying to get this kid to talk and the kid's basically just blowing her off. And he just sits down. And, you know, it's like, we've established that Mike is always a tool. And the kid just opens up to him. And I could see that. The way Robert Buckley was acting, I could see that he was a guy that had figured out how to connect to these kids and loves these kids and cares about these kids. I really buy the concern that he started showing a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
When Jerome's friend, I forget the first guy, or, you know,
Jerome's
friend. The first guy disappeared that. Yeah, that Jerome then went out for. I believe that he really is that concerned.
Yeah.
And that's really odd for a character that should be at the level that we think he is, which, I again, gives kudos to the writers, I think, that they're fleshing out all these other characters and bringing them out.
Yeah.
And giving him a reason to be there.
Hey.
That's awesome.
It's a good reason. He is a good detective, so to speak. He might be as good of a detective as he is a social worker, apparently. And he's, you know, driven. I really liked seeing him. You know, set in, I'm going to find out who's this Candyman, so to speak, you know. This Candyman, seriously. What sort of a nickname is it? It's better than
handing out the candy to all the kids.
Yeah, but still, you know.
What is something they do call drug dealers, you know, sometimes, so.
Aw, that's not misleading at all. But watching Major, you know, how he, step by tiny step, you know, minute by minute of watching the footage that he found, he found the guy. You know, technically. So, it was, he and Clive can bond over, you know, detective work or something. Or not.
I bet they're going to have something in the future where, because Major's already gone to Clive.
Mm.
And Major's going to find this, because now Major's been attacked by this guy while he was looking for Jerome. And so this guy, the henchman guy, Henchman Zombie, has a connection to Jerome, and Jerome's already got the connection between Major and Clive because of the whole picture and the missing persons and starting there. And now Major's got the connection between Henchman Zombie and Candyman Blaine. And Clive is now, which we'll get to the end, has that connection with Candyman Blaine. I mean, it's just going to all interact, smush. There's something that you said that I really love, too, is, you know, that you liked his determination, that he had this purpose. And the other thing I like about seeing that was, yeah, he had a goal. He saw what needed to happen. He was doing something. It made me believe that he and Liv would have been together pre-zombie. I can see these two people would have been, like Liv said, like she didn't even question that they were supposed to be together. It, you know, it's just the way it was, and not because it was boring the way it was, but because they were so perfectly matched. And he's not just this pretty guy. He's somebody that I could see an equal match with, where the track that Liv was on before. So I thought that was not in your face. You know, hey, we're meant together because A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, you know. But that looking at them, I'm like, I could see them together. And I see why they're constantly trying to make those connections and figuring out the things. That was I think, really, really an awesome way to develop his character.
Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more of him. Because what little we saw of Liv pre-zombie mode, we still saw more of her before she became a zombie than we saw of Major when she was in the zombie. And now slowly, like you said, it's becoming more and more obvious that, huh, that makes sense that they were planning to, you know, get married and be together for the rest of their lives. Because they kind of, yeah, with her determination to be a doctor and having this plan for her life, basically, Major, yeah, I could see him fitting in. And that was like, poor Major, because she changed, but he didn't. And it's just like,
I think we're going to see that. I think we're going to see him change and develop as well. I think he probably still had this humor, but I think he is also trying to change and develop as he's seen how Liv is changing. I think some of the stuff, like the flirting, when she's saying, well, you know, chicks dig scars when he's flirting with her, and they're, you know, the way that they're interacting together. I don't know if that's things that he would have done pre-zombie. Mm-hmm. You know, he's almost got to woo her again, because I think the way she is, even if she became human again, even if Ravi found a cure, in which case the series ends because she's not iZombie anymore. even if they found a cure, she's changed now with everything that she's gone through. So he has to change. So for them to ever have a chance to be together again, unless the motive is to have her go somewhere else. And I like keeping that tension of, is it going to be Major, or is it going to be our other guy, which Doreen texted me last night. I've got to tell you guys this. She said, I still need to watch tonight's episode, but me likey new zombie boy.
Oh.
And Alex agrees with this.
I do. I've been somewhat vocal about my appreciation for Arthur Pendragon. Or, you know, technically we can call him Bradley as well. I refuse to use the name the show gave him. Come on, it's not a sexy name. Use that name that I will not even say when there's devices recording me, it doesn't scream sexy to you or to me. No, it doesn't work for me. And he's adorable. Not only he's sexy, but he's adorable. Come on. When they finally set up a date, Liv and Arthur, and she ate the, how did she put it? The bad batch of brains. And she called him with some really bad excuse of being sick. And then she realized, I forgot you're a zombie.
Okay.
I ate bad batch of brains and I can't live my apartment. It was so...
Yeah, I'm agoraphobic now, so yeah, that was awesome.
It was adorable. Come on, I laughed so hard at that. Because at first I didn't catch who she was calling. I wasn't sure because she was ridiculous altogether. But then she went, oh, I forgot you're a zombie too. And I was like,
see, I knew exactly who she was calling, and I'm like, why are you doing that? I feel sick. I'm sorry. I caught something. I don't know. You know, what? I'm like, why are you doing that? You can tell them. And she goes, oh, wait, sorry, I forgot. I was like, yeah, okay, you're still in the old mindset, too, when you're used to nobody else knowing and nobody else being. That was a good classic moment, which I thought also really did a great job of illustrating the difference between Arthur Pendragon and Major. In that she can tell him, even if she really wanted to tell Major, she can't. I mean, when they're talking about the, like, how she can't be with him, and he's like, well, you know, why not? I mean, plenty of people stay together and don't, you know, don't do anything. And it it really illustrated that huge gap, even though Liv and Major are getting closer together in some respects, they're further apart, whereas she can be closer to Lowell.
Fine.
On that. And they can communicate. And they can do that. I like that he brings her that prescription. She says, I've got bad brains. And he's like, here, this will help you some. And like, he's trying to help her through this because he's obviously been there. Like that story. Oh my gosh. That story he tells about why he can no longer perform live gigs,
yeah.
Which I know a lot of musicians. And that is just like, when you have that high of performing live, to not have it anymore, it's like, oh my gosh, how sad, how awful is that? It's like he's really been through so much.
Yeah, I just wanted to hug him. Come on.
Of course you did.
When he was telling that story, I just, mm-hmm. Come let me hug you. There are many, many millions of GIFs on Tumblr from various fandoms, Supernatural or other, when one character is running after the other or hugging the other, and just there's this caption, let me hug you. I felt like I needed mm-hmm. to post at least, yeah, this is the your explanation as to why I'm going to include said GIF in the write-up for this podcast. Because let me hug you, Arthur, darling, please do not cry. I will hug you and I will make things better and we will find all the zombies and you will not be, you know, afraid to attack them and you will be able to perform live for them, even if it means that we will have to tie them to chairs.
I really liked the insight we got into his character, mm. Just like we're getting the insight into all these other characters like Major. We got these little bits like, we find out that he came to Seattle from London, so we know he's a London zombie. He is not the, what is it, Regaltonshire or wherever she thought he was from. So you really need to know your accents. I'm from London. He came to Seattle from London because of a girl, and then he quickly changes the subject. I'm like, okay, I like seeing that because it's like he's giving that little bit of insight, but then he's like, no, don't want to talk about it. Don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. We see how, you know, why when he feels so bad that when she says, you know, that's so awful, I'm so sorry, he says, you just said the exact thing I've been wanting someone to say. And I just saw the change in him, that she had that relief of she can talk to him. She really knows, understands what he's going through. And he had that moment that, oh my gosh, nobody has been able to say this to me. We have just really connected on this because that's exactly what I needed to hear, even though I didn't know I needed to hear that. It was a great way to flesh out his character more and really make him more human and less stereotypical and make it harder for me to know who I'm rooting for, because I love both him and Major. I don't know who I'm rooting for.
This, what you're feeling right now, this is a sign of really well-written love triangle, where mm-hmm. you are rooting for everybody, and what you really root for isn't for Liv to end up with one of them. You're rooting for Liv and happiness, Arthur and happiness, and Major and happiness. Basically, you ship them with happiness. This is what I want for these characters. I want them to be happy. And not knowing who I root for in this love triangle that is happening is the best thing. Because no matter what the story brings and no matter where those three end up, you're going to be happy with the outcome. Because right. It's going to be...
That's a good way to put it.
Good. And you know it.
Yeah.
And I'm happy.
Yeah. I just don't want her to end up with Blaine. I know that. Please. I don't want that.
Don't even go there.
You're right, because I do, when she's with Arthur, I'm rooting for her and Arthur, and when she's with Major, I'm rooting for her and Major, and when she's on her own, I'm rooting for her. They are all really well thought out characters, and something that I'm finding they're doing that reminds me a lot of Sleepy Hollow writers, which if you listen to those podcasts and go back, you'll know that there's many times that I say, right when I'm asking a question, like, oh, come on, what about this? Literally the next scene, they're answering it. So the writers are anticipating what we want to know, what questions we have that are like, yeah, it might not seem like a big deal, but it is a big deal to us. We want the answer. Yeah. I love that we actually got the answer and that Liv asked him, that it wasn't even an offhand thing. They're just sitting there, they're talking, they're having that intimate conversation, and she just comes out and asks him, how do you eat? Because we've had that question.
Yeah.
It's like, we know how Liv eats, we know how Blaine eats, unfortunately, but how does he eat? And he has to do it in a way that still keeps him a good guy, because we had that moment of, how do you get the brains that you need to keep you from going full-on zombie mode and still be a good guy? Because in order for you to have the brains, somebody has to die. So I love that she asked the episode and that we got that answer. And that it was a good answer.
It was. And it kind of, you know, explains why he can still end up with a brain that had PTSD, right? That's how he got his meds, after all. And it still allows him to, you know, get brains and still, I know we won't get insight into what he is experiencing due to his diet, like we do with Liv, just as we don't really see Blaine's reaction to his diet and everything. Mm-hmm. But it still leaves a lot to, you know, imagine, possibly write fix about. Hello, Internet. I'm counting on you. But, you know, funeral home. So many people, so many stories that he can, you know, learn and get to know, and so many new skills he can gain. I wonder if we will ever explore that. I mean, in a way that he or Blaine or anyone can use something that they learned because of the diet. I'm looking forward to that, because hopefully, you know, this season, next season, fingers crossed.
I wonder if he like did kind of like a chop suey with a bunch of different brains all in one, like a casserole or something. You know, a bunch of different brains in one meal.
This is your brain, or LSD.
Like, would it balance out, or would you, like, get a little bit of everybody, or, I don't know, because he seems pretty normal, whereas Liv has her moments of utter agoraphobia and latching into certain things. Like, I love the fact that we did see Mom again, and she comes over, and she's worried about Liv, and she's just, you know, she's telling her how she doesn't want her to waste her life, and, what? And I said, sit up straight, dear. But it's that little thing that it did go in Liv's ears. It might not have gone in the ears of her agoraphobic slushy brain guy that she drank, but at the time, but it went into Liv's ears, so that at the end she did have that moment of, you know something, I have to take hold of this and I have to make the best of these opportunities. And she does go up to Arthur Lowell Bradley, and
that's a good name,
you know, and Let's pick up where we left off, kind of thing. Oh, you know, me leaving, no. And then just plants that kiss on him. Because you know that moment was coming, which I have to admit, I think that he left not just because he had to go on the first one, but I think something was coming up, quite literally. And he just had to go, since nothing was going to be happening with them. So it makes me wonder where things might be going with them now that she's decided to take the bull by the horns and just plant that kiss on him and
I could tell
advance
you
advance their relationship.
I could tell you where things are going, but you made me promise to keep things PG-13, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, we'll save that for another time. We'll save that for another time.
Podcast after dark.
I think they're doing really well, because we're not complaining about the fact that the male characters are getting so well fleshed out, because it's balancing the story. As we have another podcast we do, Gotham, that we get really upset that the male characters are being fleshed out and the female characters are being neglected. This one, I think the way they're doing it, Ever since that one episode where we said, where I said that Liv was kind of falling flat and everybody else was shining, they've changed that. And now everybody is supporting each other. And I like that. We still need some more female characters, regular female characters in here. But I like that the way everybody's developing is moving the story and the characters along. Mm.
Yeah. I like that we're, even though the pace is really slow on those side characters that we met in the past, and even though I still think, okay, but where's Peyton? Come on. I like her. Bring her back.
I'm glad Peyton wasn't here in this episode with how messy that apartment was. Peyton would have been throwing a fit.
I know.
I would have too.
But, you know, it's when you have
with Cheetos
so
all over
few
her shirt and her
female
ass
characters. And I want them all.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I like what we get with the female characters that we do get on screen. Liv is a main character, you know, she's the lead. But we get Liv's mom, who was such a mom. Oh my god, it was like I heard my own mother sit up straight. Though I'm too old for that, but I used to hear that sometimes. And Jackie, and the creepy lady from the restaurant.
We'll get to her
later. But
yeah, we'll get to her later.
What we do get from female characters, none of them is inconsequential, is unimportant. Every single one of them brings something to the story. And that, no matter how few of them are, that I do appreciate.
Right. Yeah, the part doesn't have to be major for the character to be a major impact on the story. And I think they're doing really well with this.
You can't take any of those female characters out of the story without changing the story drastically. And that shows how, you know, important they are, no matter how many lines they have to say on screen.
Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm seeing really building very well, that if you went back a few episodes and took out something that the character said or did, it really would start to topple everything that they're building, because a lot of those little things are starting to make sense either in the storyline or in the character development and connections.
Yeah.
So I think it is really important, because that's the thing I think that's keeping it moving through with having these big arcs. The series or season long arcs that they're having, while still having these procedural moments where we still have that, it's the death, the crime, the whatever of the week, which this week we had Liv hoping and praying, please let it be a heart attack, please let it be a heart attack, please let it be a heart attack, so that we don't need to eat or actually more drink the brains. That is not a smoothie that I wanted to have. And can I just tell you, because of the way my schedule was working out last night when I watched this, I was actually having to eat my dinner during this episode.
Ew, ew, ew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was not the most appetizing meal. I'm like, no, I'm really hungry and I really have to eat something, but why is this the episode that it's airing on?
No, come on. That was the exact moment where, without pausing or anything, I decided, you know what? I feel like tea. I'm going to leave this playing and I'm going to go to the kitchen and make myself tea. And when I come back, it'll all be gone. And guess what? It was.
Yeah, well, to quote Ravi, the professional term is bleh.
Ugh.
That was, because that was just, I mean, kudos here to the makeup and effects teams, because that body was disgusting, and I'm sitting here trying to be a little bit healthier in what I eat, so my dessert was going to be grapes. It's not grapes anymore, just like Babineau said, you just ruined grapes for me because of his skin. I'm like, okay, no dessert for me tonight.
Yeah.
This was not the episode to eat in, because the professional term is bleh.
Here's the thing. I've spent years and years watching Bones. And if anyone knows how to make gross bodies, It's bones. Come on, the stuff that they made on that show, ugh. And still, after years and years of watching Bones, CSI, all of its incarnations, and all the other procedurals on the TV that ever existed, I still was so grossed out by the guy. Oh my god, ugh. Never again.
Hey, I worked on Scream. I worked on CSI, but I also worked on Scream. And I remember standing over, if you see, remember the beginning of the movie, the boyfriend that dies. I was holding an umbrella over him in between takes. And I saw all of his intestines. And he's talking about, you know, I think I'm going to hold my liver like this and then just kind of shake and then let it go and let it roll out with the intestines and all this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. I have a close-up picture of that because it was so cool. Yeah, this episode was like,
yeah.
Not want to eat that. I don't want donuts anymore. This show is making me not want to eat. So it's actually probably going to be a really good diet show.
Yeah, you know what's good for your diet? Brains.
Brains. Brain smoothies. Must have donut. I love that. Great. I ate Homer Simpson's brain. Because that's what I thought of too when she said must have donut. I'm like, ooh. Oh, donut. Total Homer Simpson moment. Did you love that moment when, like, Robbie's trying to tell her, you know, like, oh, you know, if you deep fry most anything, and he comes in and they're talking about stuff, and it's almost certainly a murder. I just love Liv. Son of a bitch! and trying to cover up why she's saying that to Clive.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. I was just really torn.
You gotta love it. The way that right now, Ravi and Liv are so matter-of-fact about her diet. Mm-hmm. It's like, we've talked about last episode. It's not a person anymore to them. It's a mm-hmm. I don't know, something off a menu. And for your, you know, for your appetizer, have a brain smoothie. It's a little ripe, so be careful.
Yeah, and by the way, my lunch yesterday was a smoothie. That was not a good eating day for me yesterday with this episode. Because I had a smoothie for lunch, and then I'm eating and was going to have grapes for dessert. It was just not... I've got to plan the iZombie shows a little bit better.
I think. Next time, do not eat.
So let's move into the actual crime. What did you think about this crime? Because last week we talked about how the crime served its purpose, the whole, you know, skydiving thing. What did you think about the crime in this and how they treated it, what happened, what the resolution was? Let's talk about the crime a little bit. Because we don't usually do that.
Yeah. here's the problem. Well, it's not a problem, but every time any show does something internet-based or, you know, something that requires the characters to know something from a specific subculture, and in this case, gamers, I cringe. Mm-hmm. Because they are rarely able to portray those people, those subcultures, and the knowledge itself in a way that satisfies me.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, more often than not, the writers who write those episodes don't know anything. And it's like, you know, black magic to them. And they are trying to wing it based on Wikipedia and, you know, first two pages in Google. So I was hesitant, so to speak. I was pretty much ready to ignore the entire crime and just focus on the characters. Because they're fun. I enjoyed them. And, you know, why... even concern myself with stuff that I know will annoy me, and then I will rant, and then you will laugh at me because I rant. Even though I rant because I care. But I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. Because it wasn't as bad as it could have been with the situation.
That's encouraging.
It wasn't, and even though I'm not a hardcore gamer, I used to be, but now I don't have the time. You know, being a grown up sucks. But I have to say, I enjoyed it. I felt like even the gamers who do spend a lot of time playing RPGs and MMORPGs and all the online stuff and everything, they could buy it, basically. Because that's what it was. They were trying to sell it that Liv now knew everything about gaming. And Ravi is supposed to know everything about gaming because he games, and Major is a gamer. It's, everybody on the show is a gamer, basically. Well, Clive not.
What I liked was how she did it. It's like, I don't know how to hack in these things, and just suddenly the fingers start moving. And she's just suddenly in there, and she's in Warlock Forest, and sees that she's a, I thought of you when she said this, that she was a Polish troll.
That was like,
I'm a Polish troll? I'm like, sure. You really don't get the game. You really don't get the game. Because I, you know, I've seen that happen with other gamers who are talking to non-gamers, and you know, the non-gamers just like, you're a Polish troll? Say, no. I'm a, just like how Ravi laid it all out there, what the levels were and all this. I thought that was great. Ravi's name, Arf Vader. I love him even more. And I love the fact that when they come across Full Auto, and Ravi is like, you know, talking about the way they're all interacting and going in there and no, I told you to do this. And you have to go in like at this confidence, and Ravi getting into it too. I loved watching those moments, even up to the fact that, you know, Ravi was getting his butt kicked by Full Auto, who is, what is he, like a 14-year-old kid or something like that? A very much gaming, because it reminded me of my nephew, who was a big gamer. And when he was probably like 16 or so, he's gaming with these guys in Britain who are probably 2-3 times his age. And he's totally kicking their butts. And I'm just like, if they only knew. Here's some 15-year-old kid, you know, that's totally blowing them away. I liked seeing that. And I think it gives a back doorway here for Liv now to have this understanding of Ravi and Major. And this whole thing. Because remember when Major moved, and Ravi moved in together, and they're putting the blackout curtains, how she's just kind of rolling her eyes at them gaming away.
Yeah, now she can join in.
Yeah, she has an understanding now.
Now she can join
in. Yeah.
That's awesome. I was afraid that they would go in a different direction when her first concern when she got into the victim's laptop was, please let it not be porn. I was like, yeah. Are you going there? And part of me had this, you know, will they? No, they won't. Because I like this show and they will not go there. And they didn't. Instead, they went into this completely different direction where Liv kicked Major butt. I loved it.
Yeah.
And that
that's awesome.
He was trying to have a conversation. Mom, I'm storming a castle.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, incidentally,
got a few things
is an argument here I used on my own mother. way back when. And you know what my mom did? My mom made me tea. Because it's important stuff when you storm a castle.
See, Liv's mom just tells her to sit up straight. The thing I liked was the way this helped out. The way they set that up first, even with the gaming, and they put a few crumbs of another path at the beginning, but weren't really obvious in your face. They went really full on with the gaming side to kind of give that aspect and to make you think that something's, you know, a different way, that it was that Full Auto that had killed the Sim Reaper there. First off, you know, it can't be because that kid has over 20 soul brethren. Ravi was really impressed by that. It ends up being this 14-year-old kid who lives in a really great apartment in Manhattan to have that kind of view. of the Empire State Building. Not too shabby, kind of showing who you're going up against there. You're still so on this whole hacker and gaming and all this that it's then that you realize that he's not just this vicious gamer, that he's this gamer and introvert because he's agoraphobic. And you see how that starts affecting Liv and where she's going with things and how she's dealing with it, which I think is one reason she got so well into the gaming thing, when she's ends up doing the whole donut shop hacking and is going in there and checking out everybody on the donut shop, when she's confronting the guy. Okay, I love the scene, and I love how they played it when they were interviewing those two people that had owned the one donut shop. Mm-hmm. And Clive is having to turn the computer so that she can see him because she can't come in because she's an agoraphobic, so she's interrogating them via webcam.
Yeah, that was brilliant, and it also showed how Clive is willing to, adjust to what Liv throws at him, because, yeah, sure, let's bring you into interrogation room with a webcam. Yeah, we can do that. It was like, Clive, you're adorable. I love you. What is wrong with you?
But even more so, after they interview and we see this close-up of the screen and she's talking about how, I don't think they did it, la, 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 and she's going on. And then you see that Clive's not even in the room. He's out of the interrogation room pacing and not even hearing her. And she's just talking. And that was a brilliant, brilliantly staged moment. I loved seeing that because it's like, yeah, okay, I think he got that. He probably figured that out too, once she realizes that he's not even listening to her, that she's just talking to nobody. I loved how they did that.
Yeah. Come on. Clive is growing on me. I honestly thought
definitely
I would be annoyed by him from episode one. But then suddenly, not only he showed that he's a real detective, like, he does actual work, and it's not all,
mm-hmm.
oh, psychic friend, please solve a crime for me. But he not only solves crimes for a living, but he's sassy. He's sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
He has this bite to him that I really enjoy. And even though from every now and then I have this, what is wrong with you? This, we're talking Liv. You believe she's a psychic? Yeah, okay, you can. She proved that she knows stuff. But the length that he goes to accommodate her, you know, sudden, yeah, I can't leave the apartment. Let's bring my laptop in. Still so adorable.
Well, you know, because her breakfast didn't agree with her, like she said. The moment when she revealed it, though, because there's times when he's really figured it out. I love how she takes all those pills that Arthur Lowell Bradley brought to her and uses that to try and come in to actually give him, okay, here's the answers. I've gone through, yeah. He's like, oh, we'll just have to hack in and find out the employee list. Yeah, already done that. And it's like, you know who it is. Do you want to share? He's like, I'm building the drama here. And how she's totally drugged out, a little bit loopy there, but still got that agoraphobic, but on this high of revealing it. I have to admit that this was my favorite aspect of this crime, was her revealing it and them catching the guy. Because at the very beginning of the episode, or near the beginning of the episode, when they revealed the one thing that we'd ever heard from the Sim Reaper, which was that customer service complaint on the phone. Okay, so you have your problems, that, you know, like you stated earlier. A problem I have with people is when they are rude to customer service representatives. And when I start getting that way to people, I go, I am sorry, this is not you. It's my frustration is towards your company. It's not to you. I'm apologizing. I worked in customer service for a long time. And hearing him yell at her was just awful to hear that. The way they revealed that the guy who it was actually the brother of the woman that he abused, and then hearing everything that he put her through. Before, I felt some kind of empathy for the victim dying. I was right on. I even remember the character's name, Sean Posey's side, because he, you know, it was worth it. It's worth it for him to spend the rest of his life in jail because this man, the Sim Reaper, so bullied his sister, just destroyed her life and drove her to suicide. I was almost in tears just thinking about what this man did to her.
Mm.
And how, yeah, I'm actually glad he's dead. And it was crazy. Although I will say, the video of it on YouTube only had 2 million views. Please, that's nothing nowadays, the whole thing. So, come on, Sim Reaper, that wasn't enough to bully anybody, only 2 million
Well, views. If you go by ratings that CW gets, 2 million is actually good. And a lot. And 2 million is enough for a show to be picked up. So, I will go with those numbers. But I gotta agree with you. I mean, it brings up a lot of actual, you know, outside of fandom discussion on what's happening and how people are now, you know, cyberbullied and doxxed, and how that abuse can continue because other people are picking up where the original abuser left off, and it's piling up. Mm-hmm. And the story of this girl is so believable nowadays. It's scary, you know. Forget the zombies, forget the zombie mode and everything. It's so believable that, yeah, these things happen now. And it sucks. And I have to side with you here. I do not feel, you know, sorry that the poor victim slushy brain guy got killed. Because, yeah, I would help hide the body.
Exactly. Because it is just so heinous when you think of it. Because this, we really learn a lot. This woman isn't even the one that posted it, like, on YouTube and where it got all this. She shared it with her friends on, like, Facebook or whatever it was. And her friends then do it. And this guy destroys her life because of something he did and something her friends did. But she's now, her life is ruined.
Yeah.
Everything is ruined. Credit's ruined. Job history's ruined. Rumors being spread out there. And you start thinking, wow, it really is that easy to destroy somebody. And you never know. I mean, some people can blow it off, and other people you just can't. And it's not a fault or a flaw in character. It's just, you know, everybody's different. And to see that kind of bullying, and to see them really kind of even tackle that, I liked how they brought that to the forefront, because it made me mad about cyberbullying even more than I already am. Because I'm like, yeah, even in fiction, it's unfortunately believable that this happened.
Yeah.
Because it has happened.
Let's change.
So we're glad he's dead.
Yeah, let's change the subject before it gets too depressing. It's High Zombie.
We'll go back to another thing that I liked crime-wise back with Clive, is the fact that it was last week that we were talking about how Clive didn't just have the one murder on his hands. He's talking about how he has these other cases.
Yeah,
that he's
over
dealing
60
with.
Of missing
kids. Yeah. Well, not even that, but even before, yeah, that gets put on top of even the other cases that he had, that the sergeant, chief, captain, police head honcho guy had on his plate.
Yeah.
And focus on those. Ravi actually even calls him down for another murder, another death that's happened that could have been a bear, because hikers found this body that's obviously been attacked by a bear. But the fact that Ravi looks into it and sees that, okay, here's this potential street kid who's had this gourmet meal. It, like Ravi saying, this is my dream, except for ending up dead. This is my dream meal. You know, this basically what this kid ate. How does a street kid afford this meal? And this ties us all the way back to Team Zombie. And we had another visit from Jackie. Let's talk about Jackie real quick. and her needs.
I think that we're supposed to wear black to this recording, because I don't think from the ways, from the looks of it, I don't think Jackie will be back. Dun dun dun. But other than that, I enjoyed her. I enjoyed her in this episode because we saw her coping with her condition, let's call it. And how, you know, hey, she didn't get her brains. And she was so hungry or desperate or whatever. She couldn't wait.
Can't wait 20 minutes.
Can't wait 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And she offed the guy. Which, for a first-time killer, you know, you gotta be impressed. She did most of it correctly to, you know, hide her crime. So props to her for a first-time offender. She did pretty good. I'm impressed. And yes, being able to kill for the first time is apparently something I'm impressed now by on TV shows. Shows you what kind of a person I am.
She obviously has enough money where she can get a new blouse, because that silk blouse is toast.
Yeah.
Now at this point.
But hey.
Never wear white to a killing. Never wear white to a killing.
Hey, she did not plan on it. And for an unplanned murder, she handled what she, you know, needed to do well. And if the blouse has to suffer, then so be it. You know? She was hungry.
It made me wonder if, because the brains were the only thing missing. Was that on purpose? Was Blaine doing that on purpose to just kind of keep Jackie wanting more, like, under his thumb? Because, you know, he's like, oh, when she calls him, we'll send one up to you. No worries. I've got it. Which, to me, I'm like, Jackie, you just made Blaine suspicious. Never make Blaine suspicious. Never make Blaine suspicious that something is wrong. But I was wondering, did he do that on purpose? By the way, he looks pretty good with his spray tan. He looks almost lifelike.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have him coming back and, oh, you know what happened to my day? I had a cop asking questions. I had about my dead delivery boy, and I have this happening. And la 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 la. Yeah, that was not. Blaine's doing a little home improvement. I don't know if it's exactly what Jackie had in mind.
Pun very much intended. Here's the thing, though. When you look at the very last scene with this other woman, the client, to the shop, do you think he's planning on replacing his sugar mama? Replacing Jackie?
With the very last scene with the client?
Yeah.
The very last scene was Liv's mom.
Yeah, but that's my question, whether or not he's planning to on replacing somebody. But
well, no, I think that was a because she saw the mom saw the thing saying that he needed a new delivery boy because Jackie killed her delivery boy.
Yeah, but I'm assuming that and Blaine doesn't know delivery boy. The entire family.
No, but that's well, no, he doesn't know the family, but. Exactly, because I don't think if he knew that was Liv's mom, if he knew that this was Liv's brother, he probably wouldn't, because that would put on the trail. This woman comes in, sees the sign saying, I need a new delivery boy. Hey, my son is 15, 16, whatever, needs a job. And he's like, well, send, you know, bring him in, do an application. I think Blaine's just expanding his business, and he's got a new kid coming in who he doesn't know is Liv's brother. So that's going to entangle them and embroil them more, which is going to bring the brother and the mother into the story all that much more.
No doubt, this isn't going to bite anyone in the butt. Nope. It's going to end so well. I can almost imagine it.
It makes me happily scared.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was a great way, because we've been talking about, like, how do you keep intermingling these characters without having it be
fake,
so forced, or so there's no real reason for them to be. How do you know? Because there's times that you've seen on shows where that storyline could be cut out and it doesn't make a difference to the story, or this doesn't make sense for this person to be intermingled into the story. This makes sense. I mean, we've established now that he's got this place. his butcher shop charcuterie front that has this great food, which I'm wondering now if this is kind of, you know, like a Sweeney Todd kind of a thing. I mean, is that all really good meat, or are we having meat pies kind of a thing? So I'm like, I don't know if I want to eat anything from you. You know, at least Robbie did confirm that that was beef wagyu in there that the street kid had, which makes me wonder, it's like, are they getting last meals? Are they able to scraps? But when the mom comes in and you can tell she's a little more upscale, you know, not that she's hoity-toity, but she likes nice things. So, of course, finding a nice butcher shop, a charcuterie, would be very nice for her. Oh, you need a delivery boy? I mean, suddenly they're entrenched in Team Zombie.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to me. I like that they're weaving everybody together. Like you were even saying, like with Major, how we've got Major weaved in there so well because he goes online and he finds Blaine and the henchman guy. And he says, yeah, hey, Ravi, here's the guy. And Ravi sees that the Candyman is Blaine, who he knows is Rutrow. It's like everything is just mixing together so beautifully. And you think of all the people that don't know. It's only Ravi and Arthur Lowell Bradley that knows.
Yeah.
Knows what what this ramifications really are. And I'm like, oh, this is so good.
But this has me so scared. I am not used to TV shows weaving everybody together into an intricate one storyline. I am used to TV shows having, you know, plot A, plot B, plot C, and them going pretty much, you know, separate ways. And things are happening, and maybe sometimes characters who have plot A will do something in plot B or plot C, and vice versa. But it's never so tied together that no matter who you take out of the story, it somehow damages that story, and you know, the story loses something important to the way it's being told. And it gets me really scared because, everybody's important to this zombie story. And I know TV shows. And at some point, somebody is going to be killed or, you know, permanently removed from this story. And it's going to impact everybody. But if everybody's involved in the zombie plot, in the zombie apocalypse, basically, then everybody is on the chopping block, so to speak. And I'm not used to being this scared for every single character. Come on, enough.
Everybody's getting so mixed in. I mean, that moment when Clive comes in to the charcuterie and is asking questions, and Blaine is, you know, like, oh no, that's just the ice machine.
Yeah, come in the back.
Dropping a load of ice. It scares me too. Yeah, if you want to come back and look, come and take a look. And you see the woman that's just waiting with the knife just in case. And you see the body parts there. And Clive being, I'm thinking Sweeney Todd. Do not go to that barber because it's just not going to end good. And don't eat from that restaurant because it's just not, you're not going to like what you were eating. It scared me because I'm like, you can't do this to Clive. Just like you can't do that to Major, like we had at the beginning. It was just this real, they're really well meshed everybody together.
Did you think when I pitched you that we should do a podcast on iZombie, did you ever thought that you would be so invested emotionally into every single character, everything that's happening?
Alex, honestly, when you pitched it, I was just like, okay, just don't hurt me. Sure, we'll podcast on it. And I didn't even research it any more than that. So,
well, the joke's on you.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. On the Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness Scale, how would you rate this episode, Alex? What kind of chili pepper are we talking about?
Last
here?
Episode, I said I rated it a strong 8. A little bit stronger than an 8. I remember giving it a piri-piri with a dash of habanero, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this This week, yeah. I'm reversing the order because I really enjoyed it. And I felt like it's getting better and better. So I felt the show deserved to get a 9, but not a complete 9. So this week it's Habanero with a dash of Piripiri. Like almost a 9, but not quite there yet.
We're actually pretty similar in our thinking. I had moments that I just so absolutely adored and loved in this. And then other moments that I didn't adore as much, but not like, hey, let's give it a jalapeno or a ancho or anything like that. Not like that kind of not adore. Just, they weren't as good as these other ones, but some of these were just so awesome. So I would have to, on mine, it's actually an average score. I'm going to call this one a Piri Weary. It kind of is going back and forth between an 8 and a 10. So that would actually, I guess, make it a 9, but I like calling it a Piri Weary. It's a Piri with a touch of weary. So it actually kind of pushes it, actually, I think, an average of a 9. But there were just some things that I just loved so much. I'm like, well, that's kind of a 10. So it's a Piri with weary. I'm going to average a 9. Habanero, where it was last week. So Piri Weary, that's where I'm at. We would love to know how you rated this episode, Virtual Reality Bites. Make sure and let us know on Twitter. You can follow us at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can, of course, email us, sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com. And, of course, let us know on our hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. And check out everything over on sci-fi4me.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice. And we will be back next week to talk more iZombie, where next week, guess what we have next week, Alex?
Maternity Live,
where we're going to see the mothering side of Liv. This is going to be really, at first I will tell you the way they freaked me out at the beginning of this episode when they were showing the clips for next week's episode. And they showed a baby. I'm like, don't be killing the baby.
No.
Don't be killing. Oh, you're killing the mom. That's still bad. But whew, okay, baby's safe. Something else we're going to see next week, just for those of you out there who are interested, which if you listen to Sci-Fi for Me or are a sci-fi geek at all, you might be interested in. They are going to be having another promo for Avengers Age of Ultron in next week's iZombie, so make sure and check that out. I don't really know how iZombie and the Avengers go together, unless there was a zombie Avenger. That would be interesting.
Avengers go with everything. I can have Avengers promo in any show. I am good with it. Well, maybe not with Arrow, because DC, Marvel, let's not get into that. But yeah, Avengers go with everything. I am willing to see Avengers promos in between every show that I watch. Yeah, gimme.
Kind of like Major shirtless goes with anything.
Yeah, pretty much. Ooh, what if we get shirtless Major and an Avengers promo? Now that's good TV.
What if we got a shirtless Avengers promo, except for Scarlett Johansson, because she can keep her shirt on, because that would just be exploitation, and had Major.
Nice.
Maybe Major makes a shirtless cameo in Avengers.
Or he could be a good segue into the shirtless Avengers. That's actually a movie I would actually watch. Like, a lot.
Wow.
There would be a lot of rewatching.
I would pay full price for that.
Definitely.
I would pay full price for that. And if you know me, you know I don't pay full price for a movie. I would pay full price for that. By the way, this is how you know this is a Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast. We will be back next week to talk iZombie, Episode 7, Maternity Live. Don't forget to check out our Orphan Black and Gotham podcasts that we're also doing. See how I did that there?
Nice.
Our Orphan Black or Gotham podcast. We'll see you next week for iZombie. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.